My next guests are fierce critics of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. Now, this may not be a unique feature in itself, but the fact that both once held senior positions within the CIA make them perhaps slightly more informed than others when it comes to the motivations that influence U.S. foreign policy. Kathy and Bill Christensen, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you
very much.
First of all, backgrounds with the CIA. How long were you with them and what did you do?
Okay, I worked for the CIA. By the way, my name is Bill. My wife's name is Kathy. I worked for the CIA from 1950 to 1979. Kathy started a little later, but stopped working for the CIA the same time I retired in 1979. We were both on the analytical half of the CIA. That means we weren't really spooky
yeah.
types. We were, however, analysts who worked sometimes overseas, sometimes in Washington. Kathy and I met each other in Vietnam in 1969.
So,
we later got married.
So you have a lot of experience of different theaters of operation in the world.
Yes, although Kathy has been working on the Middle East now for, gosh, over 30 years.
I hate to say 35 years. I started off working on Vietnam, which, as Bill said, is where we met. And but in 1971, I switched to work on the Middle East.
And that's been your field of specialty ever since.
Yes, I've stuck with that and written a couple of books and many articles and done a lot of traveling.
You believe there are comparisons to be made between Israel and Nazi Germany. Now, that's a very provocative kind of thing to say.
That is indeed provocative. Certainly not across the board, but I think as the occupation has gone on and Israeli oppression of the Palestinians has intensified, Bill and I have been there, we just were there last week for 2 weeks, at the end of a two-week visit, and we've been there every year for the last several years, in fact, five times in the last 3.5 years, and every year it's just incredibly noticeable that the situation is worse. So some of the oppressive tactics, I believe, can be compared with Nazi Germany.
Such as what? What particularly? The building of the building of the security fence or the wall?
The building of the wall, sort of ghettoizing people, restricting movement, blocking people, really surrounding villages with the wall
and
so that people can't get out or in.
What is your belief of the Israeli position? Is it that they believe that, in a sense, Israeli lives are more valuable than Palestinian lives? Is that fundamental to their belief?
I'm afraid, I hate to say that, and it took me a long time to come to that belief, but I think that is essentially what it is. I think it's not a conscious thing on the part of many, many Israelis, but I think it probably is. It certainly is subconscious, and it is the basis of Zionism.
Well, we have seen prisoner exchanges where the numbers are, you know, for
yes,
a couple of Israeli
indeed,
soldiers,
indeed,
they are willing to
yeah,
trade dozens
yeah,
of Palestinians.
Uh-huh. But you know, Zionism itself is the philosophy, the movement that began in the late 19th century that was aiming for and eventually established in 1948 a Jewish majority state.
But
in a land in which Jews were the distinct minority, and the only way to establish a Jewish majority state, which by itself implies that Jews have superior rights to the other people, was to dispossess the Palestinians.
I always say when these kind of arguments start, whether they're about Northern Ireland or about Israel, that everything depends on when you start the historical clock. I mean, in your own country, America, if you started with the Pilgrim Fathers, that's fine. If you started further back with the Native Americans, well, you've no right to be there, really.
Indeed.
So it
really
does
true.
Depend on when you start the clock. The Jews would say they go back to biblical times, and that gives them a right to a state in that particular area.
I don't think it gives them the right to commit injustice against another people.
But forging a state for a people who had been so oppressed
indeed.
In the Holocaust seemed, I think, to a lot of people, a good idea. Now, they didn't
it
necessarily
did.
Follow it through, and what the implications were for the then residents of the area
uh-huh.
which was now
uh-huh.
going to be the Jewish state. Yes, Bill?
I'd like to be very blunt about one thing. The Israelis truly treat Palestinians more as animals than as human beings.
Uh-huh.
Now, what we're talking about here is the U.S. supporting Israel. Israel is carrying out immoral, really immoral policies toward the Palestinians. The United States is paying for those immoral policies. And let me add one more thing. The European Union is condoning those foreign policies. All three of us have some guilt in this, but the maximum guilt goes to the United States, because the United States government could stop this any time it wanted.
The question is the tail wagging the dog? In other words, is Israel wagging the U.S. dog, or is the U.S. wagging the Israeli dog to do its work for it in the region? What do you think?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. And the answer is, I think it is a two-headed dog. Sometimes the Israelis lead the way, sometimes the United States lead the way, but the special relationship that exists between the Israeli government and the U.S. government today is so close today, that it makes the, quote, special relationship that the United States and England claimed that they had with each other after World War II like nothing in comparison. There is nothing to compare the closeness of the United States and Israel.
Okay, but why is that? First of all, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the strength of the Jewish lobby in the United States.
Absolutely.
Do you think that that is exaggerated these days?
No, I think the power of the Jewish lobby is very great indeed. And the two people in America who wrote an article back last March on this and who have been criticized mightily for their, quote, anti-Semitic acts by Israel and by supporters of Israel in the United States, those criticisms, in our opinion, are not valid. And what those two specialists, really good professors, did was right on the mark, and we support their views 100%.
Could I add one thing? I think there is more than just a lobby involved in the U.S. relationship with Israel, and it goes back I actually wrote a book about it, it's a history of U.S. policymaking on the Palestinian issue, and I discovered that I had to go back farther and farther. Someone had asked me to write an article about the Bush administration, the senior Bush administration at the time.
The book is called Perceptions of Palestine.
Yes, and and I discovered that I had to keep going farther back and farther back to discover what formed the mindset of policymakers in each preceding administration.
And how far back did you go?
Well, I ended up going back into the middle of the 19th century when tourism to the Holy Land and pilgrimages to the Holy Land from the United States, also Europe, but I was concentrating on the United States, began to become a real a big business in a way. On a small scale, but it was a big business for informed people. And Mark Twain went to the Holy Land and wrote, and many books by missionaries and travel writers like Twain became quite popular. And
this was almost sowing the seeds of the Israeli state.
Yes, indeed,
all those years
indeed.
Ago,
and it became so much a part of the American mindset for religious reasons as well as political reasons, more religious at that time. To assume that Jews, as you said, that Jews had a right to return to their homeland. I don't think in these early days they were talking about a state necessarily, but the Jews had a right to return to the biblical lands from which they had come. And Palestinians, all Arabs, were basically regarded as barbarians from the days of the Crusades
It wasn't inevitable, though, that an Israeli state should have been set up. For example, the Christians are quite happy to visit the holy places, which are run by Palestinians and Arabs in Jerusalem, for example.
But more and more Christians in the United States are fundamentalist Christians, Christian Zionists, who don't think, they may not mind taking a tour of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre from a Palestinian, but they do not think that the Palestinians have any right to be in that land because they're following what they consider.
But does everything about Israel today, given its formation, come back to the Holocaust and the way anti-Semitism rocked the world, much of Europe, and you can scratch certain parts of Europe today, in Eastern Europe, and find
indeed
a lot of it there.
Indeed.
And you have this precarious state set up, rightly or wrongly, surrounded by hostile countries, with the possible exception of Egypt these days.
You're very right about the Holocaust having a huge amount to do with the creation of Israel, the sympathy for Israel in the United States. I started in the 19th century, but the event that really solidified American sympathy, in, I'm talking about the United States primarily, for Israel was the Holocaust and the overriding notion that Jews had suffered so horribly and needed a haven.
And this is what I'm extrapolating that point. When you are surrounded by hostile forces, it means the nature of the country you construct is a country mm-hmm. under permanent siege.
That's
and a bit like George W. quoting, desperate times need desperate measures.
Well,
the Israelis live constantly in desperate times.
But the Israelis are the fourth strongest military power in the world now. They have a nuclear capability. They have a very, very strong military. And they have a peace treaties with Egypt. It's not overly warm and friendly, but it is very peaceful, and Egypt is totally out of the picture in military terms. They have a peace treaty with Jordan on their other side. The Saudi Arabians are no threat and have never been a threat. Syria hasn't been a threat. Syria is the one perhaps most likely to be a threat or most possible to be a threat.
The Iranian president wouldn't mind seeing Israel.
No, that's true. Iraq was a threat under Saddam Hussein, and that is Bill and I believe, and I think there's a great deal of evidence to support this. Believe that one of the main reasons that the United States went to war against Iraq. Invaded Iraq was to make Israel safe in the Middle
East.
And
can I put something to you that may seem a bit whimsical, but in a sense, does the Middle East not need Israel as a kind of a common enemy for many of the Arab states? It stops them fighting with each other.
I really think that is not the case. I think that the United States and Israel are both using threats of terrorism, threats to Israel's very existence. I think the United States and Israel are both using those to perpetuate warfare in the area and to create a situation where U.S. domination over the entire Middle East and also Central Asia becomes stronger. And within that U.S. domination, Israel becomes, again, a closer than ever partner of the United States, and within the Middle East, Israel becomes the dominator of the entire area.
It's like just one policeman in a rather large housing estate, but the policeman has a very large gun, and everyone else just has daggers.
Absolutely.
That's even a precarious situation for the policeman, because one of these days someone's going to sneak up on him with a dagger and take him out. Israel is small. And surrounded by big, big partners, and Iran with the bomb will change the total dynamic of that particular.
Israel has the bomb.
But when both have the bomb,
it's
okay if Israel has the bomb and says it's the ultimate threat for a small nation against big neighbors.
But why do you think Iran wants the bomb? It's because Israel has the bomb.
It's to bring, if you like, stalemate to that particular weapon.
If stalemate is the best one can do, it's very difficult to criticize a nation state today that sees the United States expanding its nuclear weapons, sees Israel expanding its nuclear weapons and delivery systems by purchasing special submarines from Germany and elsewhere.
Can I ask you a general policy question? Why do you think, with all the people who've come and gone into the White House, people right-wing, there's no left-wingers in America, let's forget about that, but light-wing or centrist, philosophers, deep thinkers, less deep thinkers, that the policy has remained pretty unchanged? Why? That no one has thought there must be a better way. Maybe Jimmy Carter tried.
You're
right. It has remained basically the same, you're very right. There is no left wing in the United States to speak of. The policy toward Israel has become more so. It's intensified, increased cumulatively as administration.
But is it to do with the professionals?
No,
the civil service
no,
that the public never get
it's
to see.
It's a political thing. I learned, I think the real story in the CIA, I have a lot of objections to the CIA and many of the things it has done over the years, including when I was there, when I was an analyst, and so I could say I didn't know about the dirty tricks. So I'm not by any means trying to defend the CIA. But I did learn the realities of the Israel-Palestine situation, the Arab-Israeli situation at the CIA. And And so at the working level, I think there is an accurate picture of what, and the attitude is sort of a pox on both your houses. You know, there's no love particularly for Israel, nor is there any.
You mean
love
among the professionals on at the coalface?
Yeah, but it's all political. I mean, you know, Congress is. Many people say Congress is Israeli occupied territory. Well, that may be a little too strong, but not much.
Can I ask you both? The final question really is about, and I hesitate to use this word, but a final solution for. The Middle East problem. You're not going to unravel the Israeli state, one presumes. It's very doubtful that many Palestinians will get back the homes of their grandparents that were taken from them. But what, Bill, in your view, would be a viable working solution that would be fair?
The only viable working solution is for the United States, Great Britain, and their allies basically to get out of the mode of trying to dominate the Middle East. It is perfectly proper to buy all the oil you can find there. It is perfectly proper through peaceful means to encourage greater democracy in the Middle East. It is not proper to do those things by force of arms and create a situation where hatred of the United States and Great Britain and now the EU, to an increasing extent, just grows and grows around the world. We are headed directly toward what people call a clash of civilizations, new crusades, if you want to call them that. This is an abominable situation that the United States has involved itself in, and it comes about because many Americans think they are an exceptional people. Well, they're no more exceptional than people in other parts of the world, and we've got to get over the notion that we are.
Could I add specifically on the Israeli-Palestinian situation, I think the only fair solution is some kind of arrangement, a one-state solution where Jews and Palestinians live together as equals. The Palestinians are quite willing to do that. I think they would rather have a separate state, at least at the beginning, some independence that is a Palestinian state in the small territories of the West Bank and Gaza.
Long-term,
it's not going to happen, though.
Could you have long-term federal solution like you have, say, in Switzerland, where there are different cantons which have different
languages, different religions?
Yeah. And perhaps a parliament where everybody
meets.
Some kind
of binational state or multinational. In this case, there are only two people, so it would be a binational state. That's a possibility also. There's a very fine Israeli named Jeff Halper who has proposed a confederation state, or two states in confederation so that Israelis could live in the West Bank and be citizens of Israel. Palestinians could live in Israel wherever they wanted and be citizens of a Palestinian state, and then they would have, you know, confederal relations or some kind of similar relations with the rest of the Arab world.
And what would be vital is that it would be a bilingual.
Yes.
Everyone would learn two languages.
Exactly.
At least they could talk to each other.
That's possible, indeed. The vital ingredient in any of these solutions, though, is that Zionists, that Israelis, give up the notion of being. Of having a majority Jewish state, which is highly discriminatory. It's an apartheid arrangement.
Bearing in mind the history of the middle of the 20th century, one may not approve of it, but one can understand why.
Mm.
I'd like to make one comment on U.S. history. For the last 200 years, the U.S. has maintained and pursued very aggressive foreign policies around the world, starting with the conquest of American Indians, going through all of the events of the 20th century. The United States has worked very hard to become the dominant military power in the world. The rest of the world has allowed the U.S. to do that. And the price we pay for this in the next 20, 30 years is going to be terribly great.
I don't think people realize that the United States has pretty much constantly been at war.
And that is because we have a government that regards itself, and we have a people, many of whom regard themselves, as exceptional. they believe God, and the Christian right believes God is on our side, and the poor of the world are poor, not because of anything we have done to them, but because they are poor only because somehow God has put a curse on them, and they deserve to be poor.
That's their attitude.
A final question. Do you see George Bush as a leader or as someone who is led?
I believe he's someone who is led. I think Bill always says that he is not a dumb man, and I believe that. He's very politically savvy because he picked the right people to lead him. But he is he does not formulate policies. He's a cowboy, and he has a broad, like Ronald Reagan also, has a broad, although I think Reagan was a little smarter than Bush, but he has a broad conception of how he wants to run the world, I think. And then he has Richard Cheney and the neocons.
Not a man for detail, basically.
No, but yes, I agree with that. And as a final comment, George W. Bush, the junior Bush president, wants to go down in history as a better president, a more famous president than his father. I regard that as one of his major motivations, and that creates a very dangerous situation right now with it.
I think he's probably already succeeded, but for all the wrong reasons.
But don't forget
Iraq, 9/11, and all the rest.
But Iran is coming up, and that is where the incredibly great danger right now exists of new nuclear war.
All right, on that very somber note, Kathy and Bill Christensen, thank you very much for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back.